This is the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. I'm Sean Tubbs. Have you ever been to a town in Virginia called University? If you've ever been to any place on the corner, the answer is yes. Local author and journalist Coy Barefoot knows a lot about the five-block stretch of businesses just off the grounds of the University of Virginia. A former bartender at the Virginian, Barefoot interviewed countless people about the history of this urban enclave that initially sprung up to support Thomas Jefferson's academical village. The result is his book, The Corner, A History of Student Life at the University of Virginia. Coy Barefoot was the featured speaker at the Albemarle Charlottesville Historical Society's Last Wednesday Speaker Series, held at the Senior Center the last Wednesday of every month. He was introduced by the Society's Executive Director, Doug Day.
Coy Barefoot is a former member of the Historic Resources Task Force. Actually, you were on the task force when that book was being done, weren't you? Yeah. And Coy gave a version of this talk at our fall meeting, the quarterly meeting last year, I believe it was, at St. Paul's Episcopal Church, which is down on the corner, and it was absolutely packed to the rafters. I guess I met Coy when he was a bartender at the Virginian. That's what I think. I'm not too sure. I'm a little fuzzy on that. I was an undergraduate, I think, at the time, but I'll let him tell the story of how he got to write this book.
The book is called The Corner, It's a History of Student Life at the University of Virginia. I have to tell you first that the title was going to be The Corner, A History of University, Virginia. And the publisher said, we can't put that on the cover. Everybody will think it's a mistake. They'll think you meant to say of Virginia. Because that's really what it is. It's a history of a little village called University, Virginia, that was separate from Charlottesville. When Jefferson went out and founded the University of Virginia, it was out in the country on an old farm owned by previously owned by James Monroe, and we'll stick it out there, and it's separate from Charlottesville, and it had its own identity, it had its own post office, and you got your mail in University, Virginia. And so that's really what this book is. It's a history of that little village, and it also tells the story of Charlottesville as well, which annexed that little village, and it became the academic neighborhood of this growing city. But it really was separate in many, many ways for a long, long time. Separate identity. For my book, and there's still people out there, there's probably still people in this room who still insist that it's separate from Charlottesville. I had such a good time interviewing people for this book. I can't tell you how many nursing homes I went to and retirement centers and living rooms and dining rooms and kitchens I sat in with just people who were so gracious and took the time to tell me their stories. This is my story of the corner. Whether I was a shop owner or a student or I grew up in Charlottesville, this is what I remember. And what I tried to do from Jefferson's time to now was weave those stories together so they told one big story. So there's an old line from University of Virginia yearbook which says, one of the first things a new student learns upon coming to Charlottesville is that a corner is not just a corner. Indeed, for those of you, how many of you are new to Charlottesville? Say you've only been here less than 10 years? Less than 5? Now, who grew up in Charlottesville? Yeah, I knew you were in the room. See, if people from Charlottesville, it's something about being here. It must be in the water, but they just love history. You know, and it attracts people to move here who love history. There's just something about it. There's so much history here to learn and to tell and to experience. The corner is a phrase that's used to describe 5 city blocks across the street from the University of Virginia. The corner's bookended by St. Paul's Church on one end and the University Baptist Church on the other end. St. Paul's Methodist and the University Baptist Church. St. Paul's is Methodist, right? Episcopal. Oh, my goodness. Woo! I'm sorry. That's not a mistake you want to make, is it? Please forgive me. I'll have to go to the confessional after this. So it's roughly from Chancellor Street to 13th Street on that end. And it's on this side. It's on the north side of Main Street. University Avenue, Ivy Road, Three Notch Road. It's all the same thing, Route 250. It got its name from UVA students. They named it at the turn of the century. Before that, turn of the 20th century. Before that, it was known as down by the railroad crossing, or at the entrance gates, or down by the post office. And as it was first used, the corner meant only that group of buildings at the intersection of what's now Hospital Drive at the east gate entrance to the university, and West Main Street. So originally, it was literally a corner, originally. And the buildings on either side of it, and the homes and businesses on either side of that intersection, were referred to as being above the corner or below the corner. The first ad for the Virginian restaurant, 1923, says, "The Virginian, located in the new Hildreth building, located above the corner." And it was not until the 1920s, when, of course, the economy boomed, and the enrollment between 1919 and 1929, the enrollment at UVA doubled in less than 10 years. It went from about 1,200 to 2,500 in less than 10 years. And so I have a whole section in my book where I talk about what that did to student life. Well, one thing it did to the corner area is all of a sudden the corner became five city blocks in less than 5 years, because the businesses started saying, well, we're on the corner too. You know, it became a matter of advertising and marketing to say that, you know, if you open a business that's on a side street of the downtown mall, you're not going to say you're on so-and-so street. You're going to say you're on the downtown mall, you know, just to let people know where you are. It was the same thing with the corner. And that's how it sort of spread and got to be this block and that block, and that block came to be a corner, even though it was five city blocks. Since the mid-1970s, the corner has become a bustling hive of around-the-clock commercial activity. It's a bar-hopping food court now, catering to students and UVA employees, which can sometimes make it a violent place. I know when I was in graduate school in the early 90s, there was, gosh, every weekend there was gunfire down there and gangs, and students were getting beat up by locals, and students were beating other students up, and it was pretty bad. I mean, there's a lot of history of that in the history of the university community, but in the early 90s on the corner, it was particularly bad. For most of its history, say from the 1820s when UVA was built and opened to students until the 1970s, the corner, this district, was literally downtown University, Virginia. It was just like downtown Charlottesville. It was a downtown district. 1916 was the year that Charlottesville annexed the corner area, and it also coincidentally marks the year when many of the 19th century buildings at the corner were torn down and replaced with new buildings, which is why I've separated my book into two parts, the old corner and the new corner. And we just flip it at 1916. And if you look at, you'll see in my book, if you get a chance to look at it, it's really interesting what happened to the whole area in the teens. I mean, with World War I and a lot of old, notable UVA characters passed away at that time, and a lot of the buildings at the corner were torn down. You really do get a sense that there is a transition to a new era. And, of course, enrollment was about to double in the next few years. So I'm often asked, why a history of the corner? Were you just a bored bartender? And I'll tell you the story. In the winter of 1994, I was bartending at the Virginian restaurant. It was very late at night. Wiping down, the kitchen had closed. I was wiping down the bar, and this old gray-haired gentleman walked in with bushy gray hair. He just sort of shuffled in the door. It was like 1:30 in the morning. Big overcoat. It was cold outside. He took his coat off. He laid it on the bar stool next to him. And he sat down at the bar and he ordered a draft beer. So I got it for him and I'm continuing wiping down. He's saying nothing. He's completely silent. But he's just looking around the room, you know, very interested, sort of studying the room. And then he takes a sip of his beer and wipes his lips. And he leans over his beer and he says to me, "You know, I used to get drunk in here when I was a student in the 1920s. And he started telling me these stories of what it was like to be a University of Virginia student in the 1920s. Wonderful, and they're all in my book. And wonderful stories. I got a bar napkin, and I literally started writing down his stories as fast as I could because I was so fascinated. I'd never heard anybody share those with me before. It was wonderful. And when you work at the Virginian, everybody comes in and says, "I graduated in so-and-so, and I remember this and that." But I'd never heard these stories because this really was going back. And that became an idea for a magazine article on the history of the Virginian. And so I actually started interviewing people for a magazine piece, which turned into this book, because I would go and sit down with people and they'd be like, "Well, you know, the Virginian was good, but there was the kitchen. They had waffles." And we would go there at 3 in the morning and eat waffles until we were full and then go home and sleep all day. So you got to write about the kitchen. And if you write about the kitchen, you got to write about Beta, because he was the canine who was the mascot for the football team. And he would go into the Virginian and we'd feed him free hamburgers. And then he'd go out in the street and throw it up in the gutter. And if you're going to write about Beta, you got to write about Tim, because he was on the corner all the time. And Tim was the guy who was the panhandler on the corner in the 20s, 30s, and 40s. And he called everybody Larson. And if you were walking down the corner, he'd say, "Shoot me out, Larson." called everybody Larson, and he kept track of who gave him money and who didn't. So he knew. And I interviewed Howard Goodman, who graduated from the university in the 1940s, a former football player for UVA. And he said one day he, as a student, was hard up, and so he borrowed money from Tim. He said Tim pulled out a wad of money that would choke a cow like this. And he said, I paid him back as fast as I could with interest. So gradually, one thing led to another. And next thing you know, it's a book. And that's, I guess that's how books get written. It's just one fascinating story leads you to another. I absolutely, wholeheartedly believe, and I've written a lot of history, and I absolutely believe in the maxim that history is not the past. History is a story that we tell about the past. And depending upon who's telling the story, and for whom, and why, you're going to get a little bit different version of the past. And so I would often sit in homes where one history was different from another history, and so it can be a bit challenging. And that's what this book really is. It's just a collection of stories from people who were there. I would interview people who would say, you know, trying to set up an interview with somebody, can I come by your room, you know, at the Colonnades and talk to you about the when you were a soda jerk at the Virginian in 1918? And, nope, don't remember anything. I can't help you. I really couldn't help you. Talk to somebody else. Everybody says that. Everybody says that. And then I always said, you know, you were there. I wasn't there. If you remember the color of the walls, that's more than I know. So please let me come by. And people would say, and I remember I interviewed one guy. Gosh, what was his name? I can't remember. It's in the book. He went on and on and on about how he didn't remember anything, and he couldn't help me. I'm sorry. I just don't remember anything. I can't help you. I said, okay, that's all right. We're about to hang up the phone. What was his name? We're about to hang up the phone, and he says, yep, I just can't help you. You know, because the only thing I remember is sitting in the Cavalier, drinking a cherry Coke, listening to Tommy Dorsey's Song of India. And I got chills. I get chills now thinking about it. I said, that's all I need. That's wonderful. That's a moment in time, and that's what you remember. And that's what you took away from the corner. And I think that's beautiful. And that's all you need. You know, I didn't need any more from him. That was great. I remember being at a gas station one time, getting gas, and this old beat-up car pulled up next to me. The guy got out to get gas, went in the office. His license plate said, UVA 1. And I, old man, he must have been 110 years old, walked back out to his car. And I walked over to him very naively, and I said, excuse me, are you an alumnus of the University of Virginia? It was Hunter Faulkner. If any of you know who that is. For those of you who don't know Hunter Faulkner, I mean, if there's ever a man who was Charlottesville, who was the University of Virginia, who did so much for Charlottesville and the university, he was a member of the Secret Seven Society that we found out after he passed away, which is benefactor to the university. And he said, yeah, I went there, yeah. So I actually went by his mansion to interview him. He was the only one in there with a little lap dog and a talking bird. And we had a wonderful, I took him a copy of an old student newspaper where his picture was on the front cover, where he was talking about something to do. He was president of student council in the late 1920s. And he just held that and started crying. So I just waited a few minutes. And I mean, you could really tell things were rushing back. I remember sitting with Peggy Mayo, who I actually was talking about on the radio this morning, one of the most gracious Southern women it was my honor to meet. I met her in her room at the Martha Jefferson House and listened to her tell me what it was like to be one of the very first women at the University of Virginia. She matriculated in 1925, and she said that she was the only woman, girl in her classes, and that nobody paid her any attention whatsoever, not a hello, not a how are you, nothing, until it was test time. And she said she would walk up Rugby Road to Mrs. Speed's boarding house, where she was the only female boarder, and this little gaggle of young men would follow her all the way. And when she walked up on the porch, take off their hats, you know, excuse me, Miss Mayo, can we borrow your notes? That's the only time anybody paid any attention to her. I remember being so excited when I found Frank Pollegrutto, who grew up on the corner, literally. He worked as a tailor there for decades with his father's shop and then his own. He was the first person I met in 7 years of working on this book who had the most crystal clear memory. I mean, that man is amazing. I could just give him a year and an address, and he would say, oh, Mr. So-and-so had the shop there. That was, it's where the College Inn used to be. That was my father's clothing store. And then next door was this business. And then if you walk a little further down and turn a corner back there was, the barber shop. And then under the Virginian was Mr. Vi's barber shop. And he remembered it all. That was wonderful. I would sit with him many afternoons just tape recording, getting all the stories down. I remember interviewing the barber, George Milton Via, who was under the Virginian restaurant from 1946 until the early 90s, cutting hair. Can you imagine that? 1946, right out of the war. He got trained as a medic and a barber in World War II. So he said, when I got out of the war, I was either going to be a doctor or a barber. And he said, Juanita would have nothing of me going to medical school because she said I'd never be home. So she said, you're going to be a barber. He got home on a Saturday, went to church on a Sunday. When he came out of church, Mr. Jones of Jones's Barbershop was waiting for him outside the church and said, I heard you were trained as a barber in World War II. And I got an empty chair. Will you please come to my shop? He went that Monday morning to work at Mr. Jones's barbershop, which was down the stairs underneath the Virginian restaurant in 1946, and he was still there cutting hair when Bill Clinton ran for presidency. And to me, from my perspective, he is just as important to the history of the University of Virginia in Charlottesville as any mayor, as any professor, as any student, because he was there and he was a part of making it happen. I have very fond memories of my numerous visits to the kitchen table of Rebecca McGinnis, who was 104 and 105 when I got to know her. I'll never forget sitting in her kitchen. She always had this radio on playing very softly to a religious station where you'd always hear, a preacher battering away and giving his sermon all day long. And the back door was always open, the screen door that went onto a backyard. And there were all these birds out there. And we'd be talking, and every once in a while she would just sort of stop. She's 105 years old. And she'd cock her ear like this. She was listening to the birds. And I'd say, and she would just interrupt me and say, listen to that. Isn't that beautiful? And I'd say, yes, ma'am, birds are nice. But, your husband, he had a cleaners on the corner for a long time. And I'd like to get, she said, just a minute, young man. Listen to the birds. So I would listen to the birds. And she would not continue until I really listened to the birds. That's 105 wisdom, isn't it? Gosh. I remember talking with Joe Edens, who was a soda jerk at the Virginian as a kid in the 1920s. He'd leave high school and run up to the corner, and he'd mix maltits and sodas for all the college students. And that was a big deal as a high school student to have a job up on the corner. Very big deal. High prestige, hold your chest out a little bit. Yeah, I work up on the corner. And he said that the floor would leak, and Mr. Jones from the barbershop down below would come up and just pull his hair out about that. You're leaking again down onto my customers. He's down there trying to cut hair, and malteds and milkshake is dripping through the floor down into the chairs. I remember telling Mr. Edens, I tried for years to get him to let me take him to lunch at the Virginian, because he hadn't been there in like 30 or 40 years. And at the time he was at, I believe he was at Our Lady of Peace. And I said, please let me take you to lunch. And he kept saying, no, I got to do this, I got to do that. And finally he said, Coy, I can't go. It's just changed too much. And I don't think I could handle it. And that was the first time that I really ever got a sense that the people that I was interviewing, there's my good friend Jim Dietz, the archaeologist Jim Dietz, who passed away a few years ago. He said, in the end, we all die of culture shock. Because it's just changed so much. And I really got a sense of that in listening to him. And I said, now I understand. I'm not going to ask you again. So those are just, I just wanted to share those with you. There's over 100 people like that, that I can just rattle off. Yes, I remember him. I remember her. Many of them, I'm really sad to say, have passed away. But I was so glad that I was there with a tape recorder and got their stories. And I can't tell you how many people in Charlottesville over the age of 50 would just love to sit down with you in a tape recorder. Just share any story, It was really wonderful, and I just felt honored to be a part of it. I've written a number of books, but I tell you, this is special. This book is my baby, and I really feel like there were so many people who were so good to me to share their stories, and it's very special to me.
This is Historical Programming on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. You're listening to Coy Barefoot, the author of The Corner, A History of Student Life at the University of Virginia. At this point in the lecture, he began showing slides to the 60 or so people in attendance at his July 27th talk at the Senior Center. This section has been edited for podcast.
The slideshow that I have here is, I've got a lot of stuff on here. You know, we'll just have fun with it. A lot of history stuff. I do a lot of stuff for student groups. The Native American people to this region were called the Monacan. You drive up 29, and you pass Walmart on your left, and you go over the bridge of the Ravana River right there. That's the, what's that, the South Fork of the Ravana River right there, I think? And if you look off to your right, as you just as you go past over the river, you'll look see a big green field that stretches off into the distance. And down in that area was Manasukapana, which was the Monacan's primary village. I think there were five primary village sites, and a number of hunting sites that we've located. They actually took off. They were headed down to Amherst County, the Bear Den Mountain community. That's where they are today, their descendants. They took off before the English settlers really moved into this area with any serious habitation, which was in the early 1700s. Here's Lord Albemarle. Never set foot here, but we named the county after him, 1744. This is a picture of the three-notched road. It was originally a game trail, and then the Native Americans walked it. And then when the English settlers moved in, they took this road as well, and it was the three-notched road. They put three notches on the trees so nobody would lose their way. At night in a full moon, the full moon light would catch those and light them up like lights so you could see them in the woods. And that was the three notches. Route 250, the downtown mall, West Main Street, University Avenue, Ivy Road, Route 250 West, that is three-notched road. It follows almost exactly the same route. In fact, the route through town is, that is the route, I believe, exactly the downtown mall. Here's Charlotte, Albemarle County, as it later came to be, and they relocated the county seat so it would be more convenient for people to get to the courthouse where you did all your shopping. And they created a town and named after this woman, Queen Charlotte Sophia, who bore King George 14 children. That's how they used to do it in the old days. She never set foot here either, but we named the town after her. And this was Charlottetown, or Charlottesville. That's the original Charlottesville as they laid it out, how it originally looked in 1762. And you can see up here is the what was called the public square, which is where they put the courthouse. And Main Street is where the downtown mall is today. The public square was the primary shopping district from 1762 until the 1830s, when all of a sudden some of the commercial activity on Main Street, which until that time had been primarily residential, became so popular that people started gravitating down towards Main Street. There was a little bit more area. And interestingly, the African-American community on Main Street was primarily responsible for getting the commercial activity going in that region. This is on Main Street. That's the Scott family house. And it's Jesse Scott, right? And his children, his two boys, were musicians, and they used to play at Monticello for parties. And local legend has it that Thomas Jefferson pulled Mr. Scott aside one night and said, "You know, your two boys are incredibly talented and very intelligent. You should get them educated. You should school them," which he did. So they were some of the very first African Americans in our community to officially go to school and get an education. And that was the bank building, and now Corin Capshaw bought that, right? Dave Matthews' band manager, Corin Capshaw, who's doing so much in town, real estate-wise and investing. Jack Jewett's Ride. I guess everybody knows the story of Jack Jewett's Ride. He's the South's own Paul Revere, who alerted Thomas Jefferson and the Virginia delegation, then staying in Charlottesville, of the Tarleton's Dragoons, which were coming up to Charlottesville to capture everybody. They did manage to capture Davy Crockett. Local legend says that they let him go because he smelled so bad. He got up to Monticello and alerted Thomas Jefferson, third president of the United States. He took his time, packed up his belongings, and headed on down to Poplar Forest. I will say I did write a book about Thomas Jefferson on leadership. And I'm often asked, well, what's the thing you didn't know about him that you learned? Because we all grow up sort of generally knowing the broad strokes of Jefferson. But I had no idea he was such a devil of a politician. I mean, all of this stuff, I'm going home to my books and my farm, and I don't want to be bothered with the politics of the day. And, it's hogwash. That guy was slick. He was really slick. I mean, he was really the first, what we would consider modern politician. He knew how to work the media. He really knew the right things to say at the right moment. And he knew how to talk to an audience. And he was amazing. Just more proof of how amazing and talented and intelligent he was. Here's a UVA student in the 1830s. You know, if you read the prologue to my book, I talk at length about all the problems with students in the early days. I mean, you think there's problems now? You think there were problems in the 60s? They couldn't hold a candle to the 1820s and the 1830s. I mean, we're talking about guys, everybody's walking around with a gun in their pocket. Yeah, the students in the early days, there's at Jefferson, even when the school opened in March of 1825, one of Jefferson's first letters about the school was about the students and how they were showing themselves in need of much government, is how he put it. Because they were just, the young men, the well-to-do young men eager to learn that he thought were going to show up, didn't show up. It was a different bunch that came, and there is so many really now funny stories about they're trying to control these students and implement some kind of order so they wouldn't kill each other. And what's interesting is the beginnings of the corner, there were a number of temperance movements initiated by the professors as a way to sort of make it popular not to get drunk every night. And so there were two or three efforts that failed, and then the Sons of Temperance movement, which was actually a national movement in the 1820s that really took hold in the 1830s and 40s, which was all about proper dress and civility and abstinence from alcohol and cigars, and you know, you're just a fine young man. That, thank goodness to the professors, that became a popular club at UVA in the 1830s. And it was so popular that by the late 1840s, they needed their own place to meet. They were meeting in the rotunda, but some of the meetings were getting a little charged because they were getting they were sort of attacking some of the students who weren't members. You know, we need to take it upon ourselves to get them in this club, and they got to stop drinking, and, you know, we got to support everything that Mr. Jefferson stood for. And, so they built their own building down on what's now the corner so they could have their meetings. So the very first building at the corner where the students would go hang out, they went down and sat around and talked about how they were so proud that they didn't drink. Culture shock. This is down at the East Gate. The building in the lower right-hand corner is actually Temperance Hall, the Sons of Temperance Hall building, where they had the first post office. I shouldn't say the first post office. The very first university post office was on the East Range, located in a room on the East Range. And then when they built this building, they moved it down to what's now the corner. This is sort of looking up at the rotunda in after what would be after 1853, of course, because they were lacking students, classroom space for students. So they built this annex onto the front, or I should say it was the back, of the rotunda, which Jefferson really didn't spend, you know, he was a pragmatic architect. So this was going to be the back of the building. There was nothing special about this. The view of the rotunda you see from West Main Street, Jefferson had nothing to do with. It didn't look like that. It's sort of been fixed up and prettied up, and it's got a colonnade and a big porch. And he just had a door and some steps going up to a door. That was the back. It's like the stairs in Monticello. Yeah, they're just stairs, you know. It's just functional. Nobody's going to see them. Just stick them in here in a little closet-like area. It was the same thing with the rotunda. The front, looking down the lawn, that's what everyone would see, and that's what was important. So the back, there was nothing special about it. They stuck this annex, which was called the Rotunda Annex, in 1853. And the fire that burned the rotunda down in 1895 actually started in the attic of the annex where they held art classes. This is the train came through. Somebody help me. 1840s or 1850 when the train came through. Is that right? It's roughly 1850. That's one thing. That's one reason that the student population spiked for the first time in the 1850s. All of a sudden, you could get on a train. It was so easy to get in and out of Charlottesville. And that cut right through Charlottesville, and then it made a swing down by the University Village before heading west. This is this is a shot from the 1870s, shortly after the mule-drawn trolley cars started running in Charlottesville. And there's a movement now to bring the trolley back to Charlottesville, which when I wrote for the SIVA Weekly years ago, I probably wrote an editorial every week. Bring the trolley back. Bring the trolley back. You know, I think it's great. I think it's wonderful. I'd love to see it. I think it would add a lot of character to the town. And I think it's terrific. We had a streetcar running in this town for decades, looking down what's now the downtown mall. Paved it over in the early 1970s and finished in the late 70s. Pretty bold move on the part of Charlottesville City Council to pave, to brick that street and close it to cars. Really bold. I mean, there were city council meetings at the time when architects from the University of Virginia came to meetings and said, "This is the dumbest thing you guys have ever thought of. This will ruin downtown. We're architects. Listen to us. We know what we're talking about. This is not going to work." Well, it not only worked, it's the model for the nation. I mean, people come here to study our downtown mall. What did you do? What did you do right? It's one of the longest in the country. I think the trees is one key to it because they have big trees. That makes it really special. But it worked. It was a fantastic idea. Wow. You're looking at the Vinegar Hill area, which was completely raised in the 60s in the name of urban renewal. I mean, you want to talk about eminent domain? Everybody's familiar with the new Supreme Court decision, which personally I think is chilling, but in the name of eminent domain, they completely raised this predominantly African-American community of businesses and homes, totally gone, put everybody in government housing, and it sat empty for a long time, and then they finally built the Omni, which has many stories of its own to tell. If people in here are familiar with the building of the Omni. Here's looking down the corner today, the same scene in the, I guess this is the 60s, Menser's Pipe Shop on your left. You can see the university cafeteria in the middle. I know there's a lot of people in here who actually ate at the university cafeteria. Now, I have been told that the spoon bread was the best in the South. Everybody I've talked to said, "Oh, yeah, university cafeteria. Spoon bread. Yeah, best spoon bread in the South." By the way, half the businesses at the corner in the 30s were men's clothing stores. Of course, because they all dressed up. They all looked sharp, you know. They all had to buy suits and have them tailored, you know, made just for them. Nothing off the rack. So this was a separate store in the 20s, and that was a grocery store. That was an AMP. Jones Barbershop, right? Right down there, down the steps, which is now, if you don't know, that's an office. The Virginian uses that. It's office space. But it was the barbershop. I actually met Mr. Vaya. I found him. He had recently retired, and he took his barbershop, lock, stock, and barrel, everything, and set up the entire shop in a shack behind his house up in Earlysville. So I went to see him, and he wasn't at his house. He was in the shack in the back, in the yard. And you walk in, and it was the barbershop. Everything was on the walls, the mirrors. He had recreated it, and he still cut hair for his old customers. And he didn't want to sit down and do an interview with me. He wanted to cut my hair. So I needed a haircut. And at the time, I had a goatee like this, so I said, "Shave some of this off." And I just sat down in his chair, and he started telling me these. He started cutting my hair, and then he started talking. That's what he was comfortable with. So I just held my tape recorder in my lap, and standing at the bar in the Virginian in the late 40s, early 50s. And some of you are going to, this is just normal to some of you remember this, but I remember the first time I looked at this photograph, I also wanted to know, well, what are these eggs doing on the counter? That was a mystery to me. And then somebody said, well, they put eggs on the counter then. That was just go in, order a beer, and have an egg, you know? Yeah. Pickled eggs. This was the when I took this picture, it was the Greenskeeper. This has turned over a lot. This was a bar for a long time since the university cafeteria closed. I interviewed Cleve Weber, who founded the university cafeteria. He was actually the manager and later the owner, but the manager originally. He said, you know, when we opened the university cafeteria, the students didn't want to have anything to do with it. They were totally opposed to it. They wanted to be waited on. This was the first place on the corner in the university community that you walked up and got a tray and served yourself. Well, there were a lot of university students at the time who didn't want to have anything to do with that. I want to be waited on. That's below me. They started a petition against the university cafeteria to try to run it out of business. Students signed a petition saying, I will not go to the university cafeteria. I'll have nothing to do with the university cafeteria. It needs to be closed. Well, that's going on. One night, the students went around in a touring car with a BB gun. And they shot out a bunch of lights, and they got arrested and taken to the lockup in downtown Charlottesville. And one of the students comes by, and the only business that was open at the time around the university community was the university cafeteria. So the student ran in and said, Mr. Weber, please, can you get them out? He said, I'm not going down there and pay bail for all those boys. So the student said, I don't know what to do. He ran back to the police station. Police officer calls Mr. Weber. Hey, Cleve, just come pay for one and I'll let them all go because I got to do something with these boys. I got to get them out of here. So he went down there. He paid the bail for one. They were all let go. And he said, after that time, I never heard another thing about the petition against the university cafeteria. And it became the most popular eatery on the corner for decades. And I have been told that there was a line up the street after church on Sundays. Look at all those hats. Absolutely required by first year men to wear a hat their entire first year. And of course, if you're new to Charlottesville, it's first year, second year, third year, fourth year. There's no such thing as a freshman at the University of Virginia. You are a first year man and you will wear your hat. That was law up until right after World War II when you, with the GI Bill, you had a lot of older men going back to college for the first time. And they had this young pipsqueak telling him to put a hat on. Right. Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to put a hat on. This is the CNO Railroad Trestle looking west on University Avenue. Here's the same scene right after the turn of the century after they shortly built it. They dug the road out underneath the railroad trestle because at one time there were 30 trains a day going through there. And it got to be dangerous with so many trains going through. So they dug the road out and they made it tall enough so the street trolley could get through. And if you see, it's paved right up until the railroad trestle because that's where Charlottesville ended and the county started. And in 1916, when Charlottesville annexed the university community, they did not annex legally the university grounds. The university grounds are still a part of Albemarle County. And that had something to do with the fact that they were afraid of the local police trying to corral the UVA boys, so they just left it alone. This is the home of the, who knows what dessert item was made popular here? The grills with? Grills with. Two donuts with a scoop of ice cream on top. That's it. Very simple, but legendary. I have been told, now this may even be before your time, but I've been told at the Virginian, if you were a business that took bets, that you put, was it a coconut in your window? There was some sign that you would put out in your window that you can place your bets here. And I think somebody told me it was a coconut. This is really interesting. And I know there was also a slot machine in the closet underneath the Virginian for a long time. That was really popular. Thank you all very much. Really is my pleasure. And I appreciate it. Thank you.
You've been listening to Coy Barefoot, the author of The Corner, The History of Student Life at the University of Virginia. Coy spoke at the Senior Center on July 27th as part of the Albemarle-Charlottesville Historical Society's last Wednesday speaker series. Here's the Society's Executive Director, Doug Day, to tell us more about what's coming up later on this year.
The next talk here on September the 28th is Ed Langell is talking about his new book on George Washington as a military leader. And then it says here we have Montpelier's Director of Education, Beth Taylor. That's farther down the road. But for the next one in September, I'm sure Ed Langell's talk will be very interesting. He's the senior editor of the Washington Papers. If you all have not become members yet, we've made it easy on you. Over the last few years, we've been telling you that you can be a member with a donation of anything above a minimum amount, and then we try to get you to, well, it's just a flat rate for everybody now. It's $15 for students, $15 for students, $35 for individuals, and $50 for couples. And then we'll come back and, you know, beg for money all year long.
That was Doug Day, the Executive Director of the Albemarle-Charlottesville Historical Society. You've been listening to historical programming here on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, a presentation of Wordcast Productions. I'm Sean Tubbs. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, I'm going to put a hat on.